This is 1A. I'm Sasha Ann Simons in Washington. 4 months into the coronavirus pandemic, the numbers are still staggering. More than 2 million confirmed cases in the U.S. and more than 116,000 fatalities so far. Let's welcome back to 1A the nation's top infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci. Dr. Fauci, thanks for making time for us.
It's good to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Of course. How are you? I imagine you have not been sleeping a lot.
That is true. But the situation demands that, so we'll be fine.
So here we are. Yes, sounds good. Well, we are honored that you are here with us, sir. You know, but this means that you have time to do interviews now. So instead of attending White House coronavirus briefings like we've gotten so used to seeing you do, so tell us, when was the last time you actually spoke with President Trump?
Not last week, but the week before. Okay. I spoke with him when we made the presentation to explain to him our vaccine development efforts. So it was two weeks ago. Yeah.
Now, according to the Washington Post, Dr. Fauci, 21 states saw an increase in their average daily new coronavirus cases last week. Do you think that states reopened too soon?
You know, I think it's tough to make broad statements. I think that there certainly were states that did not strictly follow the guidelines that we put out about opening America again. You know, they were rather well delineated gateway criteria followed by phase one, phase two, and phase three. And clearly there were states who left to their own decision about that, went ahead and opened to a varying degree, maybe even, I wouldn't say too soon, but certainly before they got to the benchmarks that they needed to get. The other thing that I think is important is that even when states officially go by the standard type of recommendations, you still see people within a state or a city who are essentially not adhering to the kinds of recommendations, particularly in situations of congregating together without wearing a mask. I mean, that clearly is a risky procedure. So a state as a state may be saying, okay, we are in this particular stage of the reopening, but then you might find people within the state who are actually not really adhering to the kinds of structured type of guidelines that belong to the phase that they're in. And that's the thing that's troublesome, because that clearly is increasing the risk and likely explaining some of the upticks that you're seeing in certain of those states.
And what's adding to the questions of whether or not these states have reopened too soon, things like, you know, in Arizona, that state has emerged as one of the newest hotspots. Health experts have explicitly linked the surge to the state's lifting of their stay-at-home orders. Also in Texas, reported recently 4 days, I believe, of just a spike in hospitalizations. Now, Dr. Fauci, one listener wrote to us on Facebook, and they said, how do we get our local leaders to follow the advice of public health officials like you? When our highest leaders disregard public health suggestions, why would the rest of the U.S. do it?
Well, you know, obviously that's a difficult question to answer. The only thing we try and do, and one of the reasons why I always enthusiastically speak, you know, with you and your colleagues, is that we need to keep getting home the message. I think an important message that sometimes gets confused and conflated with what we're trying to say is that one can proceed. It isn't all or none. The thing that gets confusing, it isn't as if you stay locked down or you just open up and leave caution to the wind. You can proceed towards the normalization in a way at the same time that you carefully adhere to certain of the types of guidelines which tell you to not do things that are at risk. For example, you can proceed and get a degree of economic recovery, a degree of back to being employed, at the same time that you do some fundamental things like avoiding crowds, like wearing a mask, like washing your hands. So it isn't all or none. And the thing that is disconcerting to public health people and scientists and physicians like myself is that when you take a look at what's going on out there, you see that it's either all or none. They're either people really, really careful, or many people say, well, if I'm not going to be locked down, then I'm just not going to have any restrictions. We should let the public health component help us to safely reopen. It isn't all or none. It isn't black and white. And that's the reason why when you do see crowds that are gathering together in a way that is almost asking for trouble, particularly when you're not wearing masks, that increases the risk.
Well, let me put it to you this way before we take a pause. To what extent do you feel like local and national leaders are to blame for these surges?
You know, I don't want to be blaming people. That's not helpful. I think what we really need to do is to say, these are the facts. We know that when you have mitigation of the types we're talking about, avoiding crowds, wearing masks, that clearly has a positive effect. So when you pull away from that and you still have viral dynamics in your community, that's not a good idea. So rather than blame one or the other, just listen to what I'm saying. It's risky when you do that. So please avoid doing that.
Listen to the doctor. Very good advice. We are talking to Dr. Anthony Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at the National Institutes of Health. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. More from our guest and from you in just a moment. Stay with us.
This message comes from NPR sponsor LegalZoom. We're all faced with new challenges these days. If you need legal help for yours, count on LegalZoom. Have questions about setting up a will or a living trust? Do you want to start a business as a DBA or LLC? LegalZoom can help. You can start online, and their network of attorneys can provide advice when you need it. And since LegalZoom isn't a law firm, you don't have to leave your home, and you won't get charged by the hour. Visit LegalZoom.com today for more information.
Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or perfect strangers? Get the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle on the 1A News Roundup. Find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
For James McBride, racism in this country has been a disease.
It's been the cancer that has just been killing us. And now we want to address the problem. I mean, you can't address the cancer until you know you have it. And these people are seeing the cancer.
Author James McBride on protest, a pandemic, and his new book. Listen to It's Been a Minute from NPR.
Dr. Fauci is here. He's the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Now, let's get to a listener question. This one is from Joe in Florida.
Basically, I've sat in front of restaurants and I've watched people, you know, oblivious, you know, they're just walking in, walking out, no masks. They walk out. There's no one cleaning the handles on the doors. You know, as they walk out, they're touching their face, they're touching their phone. They really don't care, but they're infecting other people. Same thing with the gyms. I went into the gym to cancel my membership. I looked around. There was nobody wearing a mask. Everybody's in the machines, breathing on each other. It was pretty scary to know what's out there and the way these people are behaving. How come there's no rules in place for these businesses that are opening up?
Thanks for leaving us that message, Joe. And I second that. I'm driving around Washington, D.C. this weekend. I saw lots of people out at restaurants. Dr. Fauci, what's your response to Joe? Because once businesses do reopen, what are the best practices for both the owners and the customers?
Well, you know, it depends on what stage of the reopening they're in. For example, Washington, D.C. was going into phase one, which means that you could have restaurant seating on the outside with tables that are spaced appropriately to prevent the kind of close physical interaction that you might see. Now, what happens sometimes is that you have institutions that actually don't abide by that. And that, I think, gets to what the caller was talking about. You know, there's this feeling, you know, often among young people that, well, you know, it's not going to bother me. Young people don't get nearly as much of the complications that we read about and see on TV as elderly individuals or people with underlying conditions. But that really is unfortunate because, first of all, there are serious consequences, not as often, but certainly they occur in younger individuals. But importantly, you're part of a process that could then spread it to people who are vulnerable. So you have two things you need to be concerned about when you should think about before you do things that might increase a risk. One, the danger to yourself, and also your responsibility. Your responsibility to your loved ones who might be vulnerable, but also your responsibility to society in general, because we are all in this together. I mean, not only D.C. and not only our area, but the entire country and the entire world. This is a global pandemic that we've got to get under control. So something as seemingly innocent as, oh, what the heck, I just want to go in a crowded place or go in a bar and go in a restaurant and not adhere to the recommendations, no big deal. Well, you know, in the big picture of things, it is a big deal because you're contributing to a risk of a very serious disease. And COVID-19 is a serious disease.
Jim asks on Twitter, he says, what would Dr. Fauci say to the protesters who are gathering in large crowds right now? Doctor, tell us, what's your risk assessment of a mass gathering like a protest?
That's an important question. It's a bit complicated, but I'll make it simple. I mean, obviously, putting aside and saying that you have to respect and understand people's need to demonstrate about something that they feel strongly about, that is really an important issue, namely the social injustices that we're seeing towards minorities, particularly African Americans, including the violence against them. So that's important. However, the demonstrations itself, you must realize, are actually putting you and others at risk. Now, many people are going to say, I'm going to demonstrate anyway. So that being the case, if you are, and no matter what I say, you're still going to do it, then please wear a mask. But keep the mask on all the time, because when you look at some of the visuals of the TV of the demonstrations, when people get animated, they start shouting, they start chanting, they pull their mask off. Don't do that. Best thing, don't gather in crowds. But if you are going to, please wear a mask consistently. Keep it on. Don't take it off.
We've heard from a listener earlier and a ton of other listeners who are saying the same thing, that they're seeing many in their community who have stopped wearing masks. Kathy also brought up herd immunity. Remind us what that is, Dr. Fauci. Is it going to protect us? And is it a reason to not wear a mask?
No, I mean, we are not anywhere close by any means to herd immunity. Herd immunity means when enough people in the population have been either infected and recovered and or have been vaccinated, where you have 70% or more. That's an arbitrary number, but it's probably close to true. When you have the overwhelming majority of the people in the population are protected against infection, it makes it that much more difficult for the virus to access and get to the vulnerable people who are not protected. So they call it herd immunity because the herd protects the vulnerable people. But in order to get to that degree, you've got to have at least, I would say, 70% or more of the population protected. So people use that terminology, herd immunity, but we are nowhere near herd immunity. The bottom line is you've got to protect yourself. You cannot depend on, quote, this herd immunity, which is the reason why I and others keep emphasizing, avoid crowds, wear masks, wash your hands, do the things that would protect you from getting exposed to the virus.
Dr. Fauci, it feels like every week we learn something new about the coronavirus, how it spreads and what the symptoms can be. What have we learned recently?
You know, that is an excellent point. You know, I've been involved in outbreaks of various diseases going back now, you know, almost 40 years with regard to HIV. And as the years went by with HIV, we learned more and more about the manifestations. The same thing now, we're only a few months into COVID-19, but we're learning things. For example, that there are other manifestations besides just, you know, the typical viral pneumonia that you think about. There are mechanisms of disease, microthrombi, which are little clots that can actually cause problems with the lung and even strokes, and strokes in younger people. There's this very disconcerting syndrome in children called the multisystem inflammatory disease, which children who get infected have a hyperactive inflammatory response that can be extremely dangerous to the children. And we know that that's seeing more and more of them. It was first recognized in the UK, and now in New York City, they're collecting now well over 140 cases. So you're right, as the weeks go by, we learn more and more. We also learn that when people who've had serious coronavirus diseases who were lucky enough to survive, people who were on ventilators or people who required intensive care, it's taking quite a long time for them to recover to full normality. So we still are learning a lot about this disease, and the more we learn, the more serious we realize that it is.
One listener had a question about antibody tests. Let's listen.
Hi, this is Mari, a midwife from Tacoma Park, Maryland. I am wondering if there is any point in administering an antibody test to my clients who think they may have had the virus early on in January or February. Is there a point in finding out if they are now immune, or is immunity even a thing?
What's your response to Mary?
The answer is, first of all, making sure, because there are a number of antibody tests that are being touted out there. You have to make sure that the antibody test that you use is validated either by the FDA or by the NIH, namely know that it's accurate, it's sensitive, and it's specific. If you have a good test and you have antibodies, it will tell you that you've been infected. The chances are that for at least a period of time, you are protected. We don't know what the duration of that is now. So although antibodies do indicate exposure and strongly suggest that that person is protected, we don't know that for absolutely certain, because we only have literally months of experience with this disease. It may be that you have to have a certain level of antibody or you're not protected, or we don't know how long those antibodies last. Mm-hmm. So bottom line is, I can't give a crisp, clear answer except to say that from what we know about other viral diseases, when you have a good antibody response, the chances are for at least a finite period of time, you're protected from exposure. But right now, no guarantee to that.
Let's get to another listener voicemail. This one's from Stacy, who used our app 1A Vox Pop.
I have a 7-year-old and 10-year-old, and they have been out of school since March. I feel like they really need to go back to school in the fall, but I want them to be safe. Honestly, though, if they're not in school, they'll probably have to be at a daycare. And a daycare, obviously, is filled with just as many kids, if not more, in close proximity as a school classroom. And I would much rather them be in a school getting an education than in a daycare.
And doctor, we also got an email from Aileen who says, can kids now play outside together? Can you tackle that for us?
Well, again, it really depends on the state and the dynamics of the infection in the area where you are. Because remember, we have a heterogeneous country, and even within states, it's heterogeneous. There are some counties with very little activity and some with more activity. The decision has to be made on the basis of what the level of viral activity is. If you're going to, say, open a school, the point that the caller made is absolutely a critical point, that if the children are not in school, they may be in a place that could be just as much of an exposure. So what some of the school districts are doing, and I've spoken to several of the principals and others who are involved in leadership roles, is that if you open the school, which you would want to do, I mean, you don't necessarily have to shut down all the schools, but take a look at the guidelines according to the different stages that you are in. Are you in gateway? Are you in phase one, phase two, or phase three? And abide by the guidelines. But when you open a school, you know, there are some creative ways of doing things that people are talking about, and I think they'll implement it, namely modifying schedules. So you might have a situation where you have one group come in the morning, have enough time to clean up the class, then have another group come in the afternoon, and then alternating that. Or you can have situations where you have desks that are much further apart, having as much as possible some of the classes outside. Take care of those who are vulnerable, namely children who might have underlying conditions that would make it even more dangerous for them to go to school, where under normal circumstances, they would have no problem being with their classmates. You might want to make arrangement for them to be able to do some of the classes virtually or online. There's a whole array of things that you can do. And some people and some groups that I've spoken to are being really very creative about that.
We have to take a quick break, but we'll have more with Dr. Anthony Fauci right after this. Stay close. This is 1A.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Facebook. It's a challenging time for small businesses in communities across the country. Facebook's Business Resource Hub offers free tools to help manage a business, support customers and employees, and connect with other business owners who are facing similar challenges. From information on how to bring a business online to setting up a customer service plan, Facebook's Business Resource Hub can provide resources. Learn more at facebook.com/resource.
Public officials from across the United States have been blaming the recent violence and unrest in their cities on, quote, outside agitators. On this week's Code Switch from NPR, a history of blaming civil disobedience on bad actors from out of town.
This is 1A. We're talking with Dr. Anthony Fauci about the latest coronavirus news. And I wanted to ask you, Dr. Fauci, what do we know about the possibility of a vaccine? Any significant movement on that?
Oh, yeah. There's an awful lot of good movement with regard to a vaccine. First of all, there are a number of companies that are very actively involved. The NIH has developed one of those with a company, but also is collaborating with at least four other companies to try and put together, you know, obviously what we would hope would be a safe and effective vaccine. We're moving very quickly, and I might emphasize, not at the expense of safety, nor compromising any of the scientific integrity of the study, but a couple of candidates are already in early phase one trial. And we fully expect that we will have an advanced trial that would ask the question, does the vaccine work, by the first week or two in July, which is only just a few weeks from now. That would likely take several months to determine if vaccines work. And other vaccines will be coming in after that by staggering a month or two or three later.
So July?
Yeah, July it's going to start. Be careful. Don't confuse starting a trial with having a vaccine.
Okay. Wanted to be clear.
That's important.
Our listeners are going to hear July and everyone's just going to get so excited. No. Yeah.
No. July is when the trial starts.
Gotcha.
It takes several months from that to determine if it works. So there's no guarantee that a vaccine is going to be effective. Certainly, we would not have a vaccine given to anyone if it's not safe and if it's not effective. But you can get to the point where you can make a determination if it's effective, likely by the end of this calendar year and the beginning of 2021. So if the vaccine does show itself to be safe and effective, we may get doses that are available for people by the very end of this year and the beginning of the first few months of 2021.
And if China gets there first, is that an issue or not?
No, I hope China is highly successful with a vaccine. This is not a race of who gets there first. This is a number of groups trying to get a vaccine. I don't think, nor would I be satisfied with just one. I would love there to be more than one, two or three vaccines, including China getting a vaccine.
Yeah.
And we get a vaccine, and some of the European countries get a vaccine. Because if a vaccine is going to be successful, you want it to be available throughout the world, not only to countries that can afford to make a vaccine. So the more companies that have successful vaccines, the better off we are. I don't see this as a race in which there is one winner.
We have just about 20 seconds to go, Dr. Fauci. You know, as cases around the country are surging, tell us real quick, how do we prevent the second wave of coronavirus?
Well, you do the kinds of things that we've been saying all along.
Yeah.
First of all, you can proceed safely to trying to get some degree of normality, but you've got to do it within the context of careful, prudent reopening, namely having at your capability the ability to be able to identify, isolate, and contact trace so that when you see the inevitable blips in cases, that those blips don't become surges and those surges don't become a second wave. It is not inevitable that we're going to have a second wave if we do what we need to do to prevent it from happening.
Dr. Fauci, thank you so much for making time for us. Stay well.
Good
we need you.
Good to be with you.
This conversation was produced by Catherine Fink and edited by Matthew Simonson. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, visit the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thank you so much for listening. Stay safe. This is 1A.